Well, good evening. Welcome to Sacred Conversations with Sacred Ministries OH. I, of course, am your host, Ray. We have Sean with us this evening. What's up, Sean?
Hey, how you doing?
Oof.
And a man that needs no introduction. He hails all the way from the Lone Star State down there in Texas.
But repping Cleveland hard right now.
You got that right.
Oh, yeah, that's it. CLE.
That's right.
He is the worship leader for Heartland Community Church in Medina, where Sean and I both go to church at. Welcome, Chad Chaney, everybody.
Welcome back.
Yes, welcome back.
Everyone's going, what? What do you mean, welcome
they
back?
Don't know about
Isn't this
that.
The first episode?
Yes, this is going to be the first episode.
Quick run
of,
through.
You know, yeah, quick run through. We kind of had a little thing, but, you know, it's all good.
We sounded great.
Yeah, you guys did sound awesome.
Yes.
Sounded
you,
really good.
Unfortunately.
That's right.
You know, I mean, the big singer-songwriter.
I only had a few things to say that night anyway.
So, again.
Yeah.
All the way from Texas. Why don't we start off with, you know, early family life, how you came to be. And,
yeah.
What happened?
I thought you were going to say, how should we start off with how do you feel the snow has been now that you've been here almost a full winter?
Oh, I mean, we can definitely jump into that first.
Which is, when does this end?
Hopefully next some years it ends in March, some years April, sometimes May. Like, you know, it just it goes wherever it goes.
It is pretty sometimes, though, like the snowing part.
Yeah, when I'm sleeping.
But then it's brown. Like, today's kind of brownish, you know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Like, slushy
gray.
And just do.
Right, you get all the dirt and all the...
Yeah, all the dirt.
Yuck. And,
yeah.
Yeah, it's
anyway.
So good.
Oh, okay, so Flower Mound, Texas. Transition right into that. Where it's humid. So it's not like the weather's perfect there either.
Where is Flower Mound, Texas?
Better, sometimes.
Besides Texas.
That is in between Dallas and Fort Worth.
Okay.
And
yeah, it's like a whole different kind of hot down there.
I claim, yeah, the humidity's rough. I claim Fort Worth, but I could easily claim Dallas too, but it's really kind of right in the middle. But I felt like since I was born in a Fort Worth hospital and I went to college in right here, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
We went to the national title game.
I remember.
2 years ago. And it was close, 56-3. 53-6 or something. I can't remember. Two kicks. But anyway, what was I just saying about Fort Worth? Oh, yeah. So it's right in the middle. But since I was born in a Fort Worth hospital and went to college in Fort Worth, I'm going to claim Fort Worth.
Right.
Not Austin.
Forever. But I have lived in Austin, too, like 6 years.
I've been to Austin several times. That's a beautiful city.
Oh, it's awesome, man. Austin's amazing. A lot of good cities there. I'm not a huge fan of Houston. That's where the humidity is the very worst. Mm-hmm. And then, like, San Antonio, like, the Riverwalk's about it.
Alamo.
Kind of isolating your San Antonio crowd right now. They're going to be done with this podcast now.
Right. Like, we're done.
Yeah.
They just shot everything.
Oh, man, speaker. he's going to say something about the Riverwalk. Oh, he's not happy about the Riverwalk. Well, then forget it, guys. Forget about this podcast.
Right.
Grew up there. Let's see. High school there in Flower Mound. Bullied. I think that's probably a big part of my entire story. Quarterback in high school, but also 5'3". So that's a very difficult.
Wow, Doug Flutie.
That was my nickname. That was my nickname, Doug Flutie. But yeah, bullied and kind of went through a bunch of different high schools because of that. Because my mom would take me out of one, put me in another, and that kind of happened until we landed at a private school.
Okay.
And that was not great, but then like junior year, I grew. That helped a lot. I dated a cheerleader. That helped a lot. You know, that immediately gives you street cred.
Oh, right. Your status goes
way
up.
Yeah, it went way up. And guys are all of a sudden like, hey, man, what's up, man? Let's hang out. You know, this kind of thing. And then senior year was easier. But it was really tough freshman and sophomore. But it's tough for a lot of people, freshman, sophomore. It's hard to find your footing in high school, period. I can't even imagine this day and age.
Oh.
It's got to be even tougher and more stressful. I think it's a lot of, like, manufactured stress. Like, you don't really know it, but it probably feels like it. Because I was trying to think back in my high school days, like, I don't know. I guess because of social media, it's very different.
You have internet.
Yeah. It's just so different. it's just we're too saturated with all this information. And even as a high schooler, you probably feel some sort of responsibility for stuff that you have no responsibility for.
Right.
That's got to be tough. But anyway, yeah, so that, and then got into theater and ended up going to TCU as a theater major. And I actually chose, I was recruited by some baseball teams and chose acting over baseball right then.
Okay.
So that was kind of my crossroads there. And
was there any particular thing that swayed you to acting versus baseball?
I just thought I was better. Like, I was a second baseman. I was all state, but I couldn't hit a curveball really well, which is huge in the next level.
Sure.
And I was a really good fielder, like very low errors, but I was hitting for contact, and a lot of my coaches told me, like, you'll probably be in the minors for 5 or 6 years before you really get a look. And I just thought, I'd rather do, like, L.A.
Oh,
like,
okay.
That would be more of, like, the minor leagues. So,
right.
And I was getting lead roles. It just felt like I was better as an actor. That's mainly it.
Okay.
This wasn't really, like, getting on my knees and, hey, God, where are you leading me? This was more of, like, what do I think I'm better at this point?
Right.
And then later I would get on my knees and be like, where should I go? What should I do? You know,
right.
Some of these things. But also I do honestly feel like a lot of times if you get no answers, we're actually more equipped than we think. And if you just say, hey, God, I'm feeling this, I'm going to go down that road. And if it's wrong, then give me some unrest. But if it's right, just shower me with peace. And that works for me.
Okay.
Like, I really feel like God answers in those kind of ways. Because sometimes you get a sign,
right.
Like a straight up, like, oh, like right. A street sign says something. You're like, oh, okay.
Right. Stop.
Right. A stop sign. But yield. What does yield mean? Going to it slow? I don't know. I don't get it. But a lot of times you don't.
Right.
Like in a very practical way. But I feel like God is like, man, I've equipped you really well. You've been in my word. You've worshiped. I mean, and I'm not even saying you've been a Christian for a long time, but you've been a Christian long enough to be equipped in a way that, you know, you might know some of these things.
Mm.
And you might, you know, the Holy Spirit might be like taking you one direction. You just have to be available and aware and then go, okay, I think this is right for me. But like here, like this is a great example. It wasn't like I came, you know, I was back in Texas after I came here and some guy in the deli was like, hey, Medina.
Right.
I'm like, what did you say? And he was like, I said roast beef.
Right.
I heard you say Medina. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's not like that. So it's more roast like, beef. I think, and by the way, there's not many delis. I don't know. It's like I'm in New York or something.
Right.
In Flower Mound, a deli. I don't even know where I got that. Anyway.
Wow.
More be like Quiznos. No, they don't have those anymore.
No, I think they're all shut down.
I'm pretty bummed about that.
They were good.
Those were really
Jimmy
good.
Jimmy John's. I mean,
a guy in Jimmy John's.
Yeah.
Medina, order number Medina. No, I said Beach Club. Oh. Anyway, so it's not like that happened, but it's more of, I really think this is where you want me. So just continue to make that possible.
Right. And,
you know?
And again, sometimes God will take us down a path that, you know, isn't necessarily going to be our end result, but it's going to be,
right.
You know, I'm going to take you through this to train you up.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can learn some things and mature and get more solid in your faith or get more, you know, see how you respond to failure.
Yeah.
And, you know, that helps you grow. And, you know, again, anything can be a stepping stone along the way.
Right.
So.
Right. Yep. So that's kind of a big part of my story was what you just said, like Los Angeles and the whole thing is, you know, more refining in those moments.
Mm.
Not you're going to be here forever.
Right.
But you're going to grow and learn as a man big time. But you got to be willing to do that, too. I mean, because it's tough. Like when you're getting pruned. That's a very tough, as both
yeah.
of y'all know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's like one of the toughest things possible.
Right.
And you just have to have ultimate faith in those moments.
Right.
And be like, man, I know you're up to something. So I'm just going to keep being, again, available and just self-aware. And I'm going to keep leaning on you and not away from you.
Right.
And eventually this road is going to straighten out.
Right.
That's what I think.
So we graduate.
I think, like, real quick, so the, like, the, you know, in San Francisco, the crooked road. You know
what
I'm talking about?
Oh, the windy road.
Yeah, that windy road. That's like L.A. for me.
Okay.
And then, like, the end of that road, it doesn't go straight.
All right.
But it kind of straightens out a little more.
A little more.
And it feels like that's kind of, like, the path.
Okay.
Like, there's going to be moments where that road is.
Right.
And then there's going to be moments where it's kind of crazy. It's never probably going to be completely straight on this side of heaven.
Right.
But it'll be close, you know? Like,
yeah, I know. I've gone down those roads, and it's like, all right, I see what you're doing, but my mind is tricking me. Like, this is where God's pointing me. And yeah. No, that's not.
Right.
Just,
oh, yeah.
Just hold on. Too. Just wait. Don't.
Yeah. Right.
Don't.
That's
change.
True. There's a lot of lessons in patience.
Right.
For sure.
So we're graduated from TCU.
Yep.
And moved to LA then?
Moved to LA.
Okay.
Yeah. So. When I first got out there, I got on a show immediately. So it was like, oh, this is going to be easy.
Oh, like instant success.
Like, this is no problem. I got a big agent. And I was like, this is all you got to do? All right. I'll be famous in no time. And then, like, the next job I didn't get. Then I'm reading for a big movie. I'm reading for big movie after big movie, not getting them. And I was like, and the reason is because I wasn't ready. Mm. In theater, when you're a theater major, they don't really prepare you for auditions, an agent. Like, they just prepare you for this. Billy Shakespeare, wherever I saw that. I know you have it over here somewhere. Right here, Complete Works of Billy Shakespeare. So I'm learning this stuff, but I'm not learning real life stuff.
Right.
So I'm in rooms with the biggest casting directors. I'm at Paramount Studios, Disney Studios, Warner Brothers Studios, Sony Studios. And I'm in rooms with 12 people. And it's one of the most daunting things of your life.
Right.
And I'm reading with actors I've seen before. And I'm, you know, and all these things. And it's like, it's really hard to not be critically nervous in those situations. But I feel like if they did a better job training you in that, and I don't really know what that would look like, but at least telling you. And your agents don't do any of that either.
Right.
Like, my agent just tells me where to go. Like,
right.
Here's the address. And that's it. And then you get in these rooms, and you're like, oh, my gosh.
Like, starstruck.
Yeah, you're starstruck of just the size of the room, all the producers in there. And you know, if I get this job, it makes a career. Like, for real.
Right. You need that one big break, and
yeah,
then it's game on.
And so the desperation that's in you, the all of that, keeping your blood pressure down to just deliver a performance is really, really difficult. And I couldn't do it. Like, and the reason I say this is because I don't want to say, like, I just feel like God had a different purpose for me, because he did. But also, I wasn't good enough at that level.
Hmm.
Okay.
I wasn't good enough in those rooms. I wasn't good enough to be able to balance all that, juggle all that, and perform it the way that I could.
Now, you say that now. Were you saying that back then?
No.
Like,
mm-mm.
Yeah, like,
it's their fault.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, they don't know what they're talking about. But then, you know, in hindsight, I was like, man, I probably did look desperate. I probably... Because you have to really relax and give a performance in front of an entire room like no one's in there.
Right.
And you and it's just really difficult. And maybe some of them were good, but I didn't have the look, or I didn't have enough experience or whatever. So there is some of that.
Right.
But sure. If I'm being honest with myself, I don't think I was good enough at that level.
Right.
How many were you going to, like, a day or week or?
Sometimes 6-7 a day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow.
Like,
sometimes you're going to a film audition followed by a voiceover, which is what we're doing right now, just no one sees you, like for a Nickelodeon thing or something. Then you're going to two commercials back to back.
You were going to these, like, 5-6 auditions. Did you have a script, or did you just show up and they hand you something?
Get a script from your agent, or you show up and they give you sides.
Okay.
Yeah. But honestly, the main thing I learned about being an actor is it's really hard to be yourself, because myself is excited about the project. This is not just I wasn't good enough at that level, because I did start to get some auditions where I would read the script and be like, dude, this script is amazing. Like, dude, I love this character. This character, Mark, this character, Blake, like, this is so cool.
Right.
And they hate that.
Mm.
Really?
That looks like desperation. and no one tells you that. So then they're going like, okay, just read the.
Right.
And so you do it, and then they're like, oh, this guy. And it's like, what? I'm proud of your work? Well, I'm excited because you wrote a really good
right.
script. Like,
right. Like, I'm bringing the character to life, and you're like, all right,
right.
get him out of here.
So then when I started booking a lot, I would walk in and go, oh, my agent didn't even give me the sides. So, and they would go, what? Do we need to call him? And I go, you can call whoever you want. I don't care.
Right.
And I literally did this and got more jobs this way. And they go, well, we have sides. And now keep in mind, I memorized it.
What do you mean sides?
I have the script. So it's the script. Like, yep. Sides is like a scene.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So if the scene is like a guy with his girl in a car or whatever, right?
Oh, okay.
I'm holding the script and there's the girl talking over here.
I see.
So I'm holding the script as if I've never seen this script when really I have every line memorized. And so I'm looking at it, just whatever about it. You just want me to go now? Or and they're like, yes. And I go, okay. And then, Mike, why would you even halfway tell me that? Like, boom, I'm in, right? And then I'm done. And I just, like, throw the script off, and I'm like, all right, well, anything else? Are we good?
Right.
And they're like, geez. And they book me.
Yeah, this guy's already got chips on his shoulders.
Then
Let's hire him.
Then they book me again. Then they book me again, and I'm like, okay, this
right.
sucks.
Wow.
Like, this is how you get work? Now, to be fair, when you're on set, it's not like that. Like, when you actually get on set, everyone's actually way nicer and cooler, and it's not really about that. But when you are auditioning, you have to play the game.
Right.
And the game is, I don't need this.
Yeah, I'm doing you a favor by coming here and reading.
Yeah, I would say I would come late. I started coming late.
Really?
I would walk in and be like, I don't I got another audition in 15 minutes. Do it.
Can we get this over with?
Do you really need me to read this? And they would be more intrigued that way.
Right.
So then, once I started to realize that, I was like, okay, this isn't me at all.
Yeah.
Like, I'm acting to act.
Right.
Right.
And so then, like, with music, man, I've played with some really big Christian artists, and I've been like, dude, I love your stuff, and blah, 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 and you're the reason I do this stuff. And they're like, no way, I love right. that, da, 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 da. And it's like, it's real.
Right.
Not everyone's like that, but for the most part.
Sure.
But they don't sense it as desperation or none of that. Like, that enthusiasm is well received in this world, in the church world, in the Christian music world, but
right.
not in Hollywood. So.
All right. So how did you segue from the acting? Obviously, you're not.
Right. So that's kind of, that was a part of it. And then how unrelational that town is. So I was hanging out with this producer that's really well known, and I was at a house party, which we did those all the time up in the hills. And I was in this dude's library till like 3 a.m., just me and him, cigars and whiskey till like 3 a.m. Just chopping it up about not really even just sports, you know, like not even really acting or anything. I see this guy in the grocery store 2 days later, 2 days. And I'm like, hey, what's up, man? And he's like, and you are?
Really?
And I was like, oh, I had written a script right then that was getting a little whatever. We were reading them at Universal and stuff. And that's why I got to go to that house party.
Oh, okay.
And so I was like, oh, man, I wrote Lucky Fellas. And he was like, oh, yeah, it's not a bad script. And he was like, man, I'm really in a hurry. And I was like, but what? What about these 3 hours in your home
right.
two nights ago? And it was just like such a wake-up call. I was like, oh, I'm way too relational for this town.
Right.
Right.
Like, I don't have any conversations other than surface level in this town ever. And so mixed with I'm acting just to act, and then that part where it was like no one here really wants to go more than just what are we doing as actors.
Mm.
And I don't have a ton of friends out here. And the girl I was dating at the time, anyways, that was toxic because she was an actress too. So you had that going on where we were both in movies at the time, two independent films where we both had like love scenes.
Mm.
And so that's a real fun argument every single night of a 3-month shoot. You
right.
know? And so then there was all that kind of thing going on, which is not real life. Like, these are, what kind of, it's just so weird. And so that was happening. And so all those things, and then it really drove me to be like, hey, God, I thought I was coming out here to do something for you. I'm clearly not. This is much more about me. So what could I do that would build your kingdom? And that's how.
And right. And it sounds like you're not even happy with, you know, doing it for yourself. Like you, you're seeing it for what it really is rather than buying into the hype of it and becoming that, you know, superficial
sellout.
Yeah.
Oh, I was becoming that guy. And my best friend Troy back in Fort Worth, we're sitting in his hot tub one night. I was in L.A. 5 years probably, and I was in there, I was total 7 years, but I was in there 5 years, and my best friend just looks at me, and he just goes, bro, you are not the same dude.
Mm.
And that, from one of your buddies, will destroy you.
Right.
Right.
But it still took 2 years, because there was a part of me that was like, ah, you don't even, that's because I'm done with this town, I'm up here, you know, like, what he was saying, I was like, yeah, right. I'm not the same guy. Like, I'm actually this guy.
Right.
But I wasn't. But
not taking it for what it was really meant
right.
to say.
And then after he said that next 2 years, I just kept noticing more and more. And it's a rough town. Even the guys I still know now, let's see, of my four closest friends, three of them have left.
Hmm.
So I just have one friend there now, and he writes all the Hallmark movies. So he's doing great. But and I used to live with that guy, and he's solid, man. He's from Oklahoma, and he's a really good dude. But that's it.
Wow.
One dude.
All right. So we got to ask, like, who is the most famous, I guess, person that you like read across from or whatever? Like,
oh, there's tons. Like
people that we know.
Yeah, Brad Pitt, David Beckham. But as far as like having a good conversation, probably some of those are going to be like Ed Harris.
Oh, he's awesome.
He's like a real dude.
Yeah,
right.
So that was like a real conversation. We talked about a little bit of the business because he was doing Pollock. I'm in Parma. Watch it, brother.
Right.
Watch it, brother. I don't want to say it wrong again. Pollock. And he was an artist, right? And he got the call for Truman Show while he's on that set. And they were like, we want you to do this in 3 days. And he was like, huh? And he was telling me this. And so he flew. I guess they did Truman Show in North Carolina or something. I can't remember. And when he got there, they gave him the script, and he had never seen it. And he got an Oscar nomination for that. Like,
really?
That's how good that dude is.
Yeah, I like
you know?
Him.
That's
so
awesome.
That one, I mean, I saw Vince Vaughn all the time drinking. He had a real problem.
Did
so,
he?
Yeah, I used to see him at the Joy Luck Bar in Los Feliz all the time.
Hey, Vince, if you're out there, buddy.
Yeah, Vince. Right. I think he's doing better.
Give
though.
Us a shout.
I think he's doing better. I mean, I don't know, but I think he's doing better.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it was pretty common.
That's
cool. You would get to know. I mean, if you go to the same places and so do they,
right?
You would start to.
Well,
of course, at first you're like a fan, so you're like, you know. I mean, Tom Hanks is the only one that I absolutely couldn't get anything out. He's my favorite actor. So when I met him, I was like,
oh. You gotta try to reel it in.
And I
right,
go,
right.
I literally said, you're Tom Hanks. And he was like, yeah, buddy.
Right.
And then I just stared at him.
Right.
And then that was it. Like, I couldn't get it. I just couldn't get it out. And that was it. So that was the only one that I was ever like, I cannot believe I'm standing next to this dude, but
right.
Everyone else is pretty normal.
So, I mean, you had, like, instant success, though, like you said, right out of, you know, because I'm like,
no.
Well, I'm thinking, like, Penny from the Big Bang Theory, like, where she moves out there to be an actress and,
yeah.
You
for
know.
My story, instant success, but then it didn't last.
Pan out,
yeah. It was just more.
So what was like?
It was more like, oh, I think this is going to be easier than I thought.
Right,
like
right.
One of the first times I went to the horse track and I won, and then I lost like 20 times.
Yeah.
This is easy.
Right, right.
So easy. Yeah.
So what was like your most memorable or favorite thing that you've done?
Well, that actually was a video game. I think I said that last time, but it another podcast I did in the past.
Yeah, I remember.
One I did in the past. But yeah, that was a video game for Midway called Criminal, where I played Nick Warden or something. I think he's the main dude or whatever. And that was the most fun acting job because you had all the motion capture. You're running through warehouses. And
right.
That was the coolest, for sure. As far as just independent films or a TV show or any of that, it's all cool.
Sure.
Or like I was in 3 national commercials for Domino's. That was cool. But it's one of those things that it's like you're on set for 12 hours and you work like literally an hour. So you're just literally sitting in the green room all day.
Just waiting.
Right.
And then they come and they have you, you know, like, A, you're on set. You go shoot it for a second. Something's not right. The color, the this, the boom mic, the this.
The sound.
The props, the this, the sound. You know, all this kind of thing. And no one could ever hear me. It was odd. And then and then you go back and they go, we'll call you back. And then you come back and you do your lines, which are like one scene.
Mm.
And then you go back. So it's a lot of hurry up and wait.
Right.
Whereas the video game, we didn't work till like noon or maybe 1 even. And we only worked for like 3 hours every day.
Mm.
But we just worked the whole time. And there was no, you know, you didn't hurry up and wait. And then they gave me a per diem, so then I got to go see Chicago. And
okay, cool.
It was really, really cool. So that was probably the coolest, like that, like where it was just a out of the box,
right?
You know, as an actor, fun experience.
So did you have like a God moment or something? It's like, it's time to leave. Today's the day.
Yeah, yeah. So at the men's breakfast, I played that song. Men's breakfast, we had it. Harlan, y'all were there. And that song was that night where God was basically like, hey, I hear you. This isn't your plan.
Right.
And you need to get out of L.A. because I got something else for you.
Right.
And so that was that. Yeah, that was a huge God moment. And that's there was awesome. 2 things that happened. When that happened that night, I knew I had to leave. I knew that was it. I did all I could do. But there was a grieving process of like, you didn't make it.
Right.
So my earthly self had to really grapple with that.
Okay.
And be like, dude, you had all, you could have done this, but you didn't. And then my other self is like a devil and an angel. Like
right.
My other self was like, no, but it was never the plan.
Right.
But it was like, as a man, it's like, yeah, but I don't care. I needed to be successful regardless. Then I could leave on my terms, whatever. And it's like such a weird argument in a circle. And it just, I just felt God saying like, are you gonna listen to me or just kind of argue
right.
with yourself? You know, like, how about you get excited about what's coming next,
right?
And not,
well, that's why I've had moments like that in my life, and that's where I'm putting Sean's timeline,
right?
And I feel like my life with God is successful now, or many times that I kind of succeeded or failed, but it was still God's path to get me to here right now,
right,
for the second recording.
That's right, for the second
recording. Yes, for those of you that haven't caught on yet, we've recorded this show once already and had a technical error.
But
so.
But no, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, dang it, I failed. I'm like, no, it's my time. It's, you know, it's God's time.
Yeah.
Right.
But
there's also some truth, too. If we would have succeeded in some of those areas, it would have been even worse.
Exactly.
Oh, sure.
Mm.
Like, if I would have succeeded for real, then God wouldn't have been a part of
you
it.
You may have missed the opportunity in your calling.
Man, I would have
God,
never impacted people for Jesus like I do now.
Right.
There's no chance. And I know that.
Right.
But it's hard. I mean, as a human, it's hard to be like, dang, dude, I didn't do.
I mean, especially at that time as you're giving it up.
Right.
When, you know, I mean, now it's like, at least for me, it would be like, who cares? You know?
Right.
I'm so over that. Like, look at what, you know, I might not be that famous or, you know, have the endless money and stuff of a Al Pacino or Brad Pitt or something, but I've got the people that you're impacting and the things that you're doing with your life. That's just incredible.
Way more valuable, way more kingdom minded too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But honestly, I struggle with this and I'll be just completely transparent all the way till this year. Because I had someone tell me here, when I first got here, an actor at our church. There's a guy that's an actor there. Rich something. He was a bodybuilder, and he's still an actor. And he has an agent in Cleveland. And he was like, hey, man, I can get you. And he was like, he's always like, man, you've done more than I have, and I've got a good agent, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, you know what? Why don't I hook you up with the agency, and just in your spare time, maybe you could still do some things.
Mm.
And when he told me that, there was a part of me that was like, okay, let's get back into this bad boy. And
right.
then on the drive home from that meeting, I was like, nope, I don't want any part of this ever again. And it was like, well, then why did you? So even to this point.
Him?
Yeah, Rich Reeder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good dude.
He's a great.
I didn't know he was an actor.
He is a great dude. He's been in lots of commercials for like Bueller's and.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's great. But anyway, so it was one of those things where it was like, okay, I still didn't bury it. Because now it's completely buried. Now someone could say something and I'll be like, nah, I don't do.
Right.
Right.
But even this year, he was like. Now, on the other hand, I do still have the skill set. If someone did say, you know, if it was like a Kingdom movie or something, I would still do it. But there's
so
no.
So like if Dallas Jenkins from The Chosen
yeah,
calls,
if The
you're,
Chosen
like
called,
you're
yeah.
in. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I know the producer of The Chosen, so Chad Gunderson. He's from Flower Mound.
It's like you know everybody.
There you go. But yeah. But no. But so
we
when
get
I'm
him on the show.
Yeah. You. Yeah. I bet you could.
That would be.
I mean. Zoom, obviously,
oh,
but
yeah,
well, yeah, fine.
I mean, he's got the money; he can fly.
I'll see what I can do.
He can fly us down.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But anyway, so that's kind of where I'm at. Like, it doesn't. I'm never going to chase it again.
Right.
But if for some reason it came into my lap or whatever, then I would definitely do my best and try to, you know,
no, for sure,
make
I
the
mean,
project better.
It's just you know, and again, that could very well be, you know, God allowing. That temptation to come in of, hey, here's an opportunity
right.
to, you know, and it's like, hey, I'm doing something as a favor or just, you know, on the side or whatever. And then, you know, you get a bunch of hype about it and it's like, okay, so how are you going to react to it?
Right.
You know, but I mean, it, you know, you'd like to think that you're kind of solid and I mean, you seem pretty good in your faith and
yeah,
where
yeah.
you stand. You know.
But just for a split second, I was,
right.
you know.
Right, I, which,
thinking
again,
about
it's
it, which
human.
Is human.
It's human.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But it was quick, man. Yeah, it was within I mean, minutes that I was like, nah.
I wouldn't beat myself up over it. But
no, I didn't.
Yeah,
but it was within minutes. And then I told Rich that. And that made an impact. Like, just that part of it.
Right.
Which was really cool. So, yeah. But on the other hand, music-wise, I'll chase that. That doesn't feel
as
like.
As well you should.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like, to me, like anything near acting does.
Right.
Mm.
There's just much more purpose in it. There's much more reward in it, fulfillment in it, like all that.
Right.
So.
All right. So while we hang up the acting thing.
Yep.
Do you stay in L.A.? I mean, like, because it's like you're trading one vice for the other because,
right.
you know, it's either New York. Or L.A. is basically where you go for music and acting. And,
right.
And
well, then I go to Austin, which is another music town. And
so you left L.A.?
I left L.A. and went to Austin.
Okay.
Yeah. And when I got to Austin, I mean, I had a guitar, barely played. Again, a girl asked me to play in college. That's where it's an old podcast I did. I remember telling that story. But yeah, she.
You don't want to go into that again?
I mean, not really. She just was like, she heard me singing like a jingle or something. And I don't remember what I was singing. Nothing
like
real.
And
she
was
like,
you
might
be
a singer.
And I was like, nah.
Right.
And she was like, you should probably get a guitar and like just learn a song or two. And I was like,
you're crazy. And then I broop right to the pawn shop.
Gotta go.
Yeah, I'll be right back. So I was like, just in case, hypothetically, if I learned a song, what would like be a song like you would like or whatever? And so it was It's Your Love from Tim McGraw. So I learned that puppy quick. Sang it for her, and she was like, you need to hang up the acting thing, and this is probably what you should do. And I did a post a couple years back to her, and I was like, you right all along, and just did this like cheesy. It was cool. But she saw it then. And I was terrible then, so I don't know. Good for her.
But anyway, so that's what I had, like a guitar, cheap guitar, and one song in my bucket.
Right.
And I just played that at a get-together in Austin, and that's when a guy asked if I'd be interested in leading worship at a singles group. And then I do that. I'm terrible. No one's singing, which, as we know, at Heartland, that's my favorite thing in the world.
Right.
And so no one. Like, just everyone staring at me, and I mean, I can't play guitar really good. I'm flat, like, the whole thing.
Like, how big is the group that you're playing?
Oh, 15 people. That's it.
And they're all just like...
Yeah, and they're all just nothing.
Put this guy back under the bridge.
They'd be on, if we had social back then, they'd be on TikTok during the set.
Right.
But, so they're just, yeah, they're just out, and I go over to, you know, put my guitar back in my guitar case. As I'm closing the case, boom, full body called. This is what you're going to do for the rest of your life.
Hmm. Really?
And it was like, what? And so then it was going to churches and saying, hey, I just feel like I got called to be a worship leader. What does that look like? And meeting with guys every week downtown Austin that are worship leaders that are very successful. And they just took me under their wing and was just like, this is what it looks like on stage. This is what it looks like off stage. I'm more concerned about off stage.
Right.
And just kind of taught me what it looks like to disciple from a worship leader standpoint and all that. And then I had to get better vocally. I had to get better at the guitar, you know, all that kind of stuff. And still getting better all the time on that stuff. And I always said this, I feel like I'm a blue collar worship leader. Means I, like, put my hat, my construction hat on and my lunch pail, and I go to work on the music side.
Right.
But on the giftings, the engagement, some of that stuff, like, that's just natural.
Right.
And so that's where God's gifted me.
Right.
And some of that, you know, the acting background helps a lot of that and some of that. So that's where, you know, it was goes this way, but it was really supposed to be meant for this.
Right.
You know?
Well, again, so, that's where you kind of learn these things to help you be more successful in this, what your actual calling is for.
Yep.
Had you started writing any songs yet?
Yes. In Austin, I wrote like 12 songs all in a row that I had, that was the first time I ever wrote. Mm. And that night I just kept writing them.
Cause you had the one song in LA, which is why you left.
Well, that's that song I didn't write till later.
Oh, okay. I got you.
That's just that night.
Oh, okay. That's when you got the feeling and
yeah.
I got you.
The first song I wrote, I don't have it recorded. I just want to stand here and praise you. It's all about the night that I went to a passion conference in college. And I wrote it after this experience.
Right.
But I went to a passion conference in college, and and this is why I wanted to go out and be an actor for Jesus. Like, this night is the reason. Because there was like 30,000 people.
Oh, wow.
And there was a song called Better Is One Day, which a lot of people still know, obviously. Mm. And all of a sudden, they all disappeared. Like, for real. There's not a lot of supernatural things that happened to me.
Right.
This is one. And it just felt like it was me and God.
Wow.
And so that's what that song's about. Just all these people, but it's just you and me.
Right.
And I just want to stand here and praise you like I never praised you before. So that's what that is. And so anyway... And we actually ended up doing that song in Austin, and it became, like, for a year, it was in rotation.
Nice.
So that was my first song I ever wrote, was about that experience. But I wrote that after what I'm talking about. So one night I just wrote, like, 12 songs in a row, and they just kept coming out. And I just was like, oh, yeah, I'm a writer, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
And probably 2 were good. The other 10 were garbage, but they were just, you know... I wrote them, and so
sure.
I went to a producer and was like, I don't know, I wrote these songs, I don't know, blah, blah, and I got a record deal immediately, like a half, he paid for half the production, and I paid for half, and we put out that record called Filled With Emotion, and you can find it on YouTube, it's not good, but it's, the cover is me in a, like my Nissan Xterra, and I'm looking in the rearview mirror,
yeah,
because I don't need the rearview anymore. Like, you know, I mean, it's pretty cheesy, but anyway, so that record got me to be able to play on 6th Street in Austin like every weekend, my songs,
right? That's awesome.
In bars, and I was playing these songs like Mesmerize was our big song.
that was, you know, just all totally overt Christian stuff. And there's a, there's on YouTube, there's a video of that mesmerized 15 years ago, that first night playing live.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, that's where I kind of got the writing. Like, there is nothing like watching people sing your stuff, or especially like Brenna singing the verses of my song last weekend.
Yeah, that was good.
That was amazing. I like so that. Then when it becomes other people's song too, that's amazing. There's other churches around the country that'll sing Glory is the Sound or a couple of my songs, which is,
no, that's cool.
I can't even tell you how cool that is.
Right.
But there's something about you. It takes a minute. You got to get over it because it is your song. So there's like, there's such a connection to it, but you do it enough and you kind of forget. It just becomes like just another tool to impact the kingdom. It's not, and then it's not about me. But at first, it's hard to separate it for a second.
Right.
And then you do it two or three times. Like, I'm amazed we do it at the church, and that doesn't.
Right.
I kind of, it just feels like a worship tune that we just do, you know? And so it takes a minute. But once it's there, it's like.
And then when you have somebody talented like Brenna, I mean, she just really.
I know, it was awesome.
Like, it was like, it was, you know,
yeah,
written for her to,
I know,
sing that part.
I know, the way she sang
it was
like incredible.
Amazing.
I know. I agree.
So you got, you're in Austin, you're writing some songs. You have God that's like, this is what you're going to do now, even though he didn't have a good reception.
Right.
Did you find a home church in Austin right away, or?
Well, so these guys pretty much mentored me for 3 months, and then, and I was doing personal training.
Oh, okay.
Like, I wasn't even a worship leader yet. You know, they were bigger back then. Not you, but, you know what I'm saying, big dog. I ain't trying to get like that.
Right.
But yeah, so I was, I wasn't really doing anything yet as far as, like, worship leading.
Okay.
And then this guy, Wade Killow, who's still a really good friend of mine, was my first pastor. And he said, we need a guest worship leader. And it was on Craigslist. And I answered it. And
you gotta be careful,
right?
You know, you gotta be careful. And he put me in a trunk and he drove me
he
to
said,
a,
trust me,
a La Quinta. So anyway, so then, yeah, so I played one day, just one service, and then he was like, we need a worship leader. And then I was there for 4 years.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So that's what happened. So that became my home church, Rockbridge Church, which is still there in Cedar Park, which is next door to Austin. So, yeah.
So, what happened to that?
dun,
dun, dun, dun.
Oh, Rockbridge? Well, then I got married around this time, and then we moved back to Dallas.
Okay.
Or DFW. And then I took a church in Fort Worth. And then, so that's, it was actually a really good, when I left Rockbridge, it was really, so I've left Rockbridge, Alive, Journey. I've left three, like, main, you know, like, they were my jobs for years as a worship leader. And two of them were the best exits ever, and one I was fired the day of on the divorce side.
Right.
But the ones where I left good, man, it was like awesome. It was like for a month and a half. Everyone knew it was happening, and it was just like really well done. Sometimes leaving a church well is one of the best experiences of my life. Like, it's really hard to do.
Right.
And so to do that and have their full blessing and, like, you know, they're all for it. Because that one was Katie and I going back to Dallas. But the other one was I was going on tour.
Okay.
And I had just put out a record that is still on Spotify that has, like, Love Remains, Amazing Grace for Days, some of these songs that we sing at Heartland. There's Always Grace, which I'm singing next weekend and the weekend after that.
Okay.
And I played it for you last time I was here.
Yeah.
Or not here, but last time I was just hanging out with you. But anyway, so that record they would, like, put on the big screen and, you know, and we and then play the songs and all that and be like, this is where Chad's going. And they prayed for me every week. And it was just really, really cool when that stuff's done well. So.
Right.
You said in there you got divorced. I didn't hear you say you got married. Is this the toxic relationship?
Straight to the divorce.
Is this the toxic relationship in LA?
This was in Austin. I met her first couple months I was in Austin, and she was, you know, drove a truck, had an accent, curly hair, and I was like, oh, this is it.
Right.
And her dad was a pastor, small church, but still, he's a pastor, and so I dated her 3 months and married her.
Uh-huh.
And she was also a singer,
And then her ambition wasn't the same.
You don't do anything half speed, do you?
No.
You just go out to L.A. and, like, boom, I got a deal. Like, everything is just instant success for you. Like,
Some things. Well, worship leading was first church I played at. Right.
Right.
And I know it's very competitive, and that's not really how it works. But I didn't at the time.
Right.
Right.
Here I am again, like. You know, in L.A., I get the first, you know, TV show right out of the bag. So
right.
I was like,
so you're like, hey, I met this girl, and 3 months later, let's get married. Why not? You know, like.
But I was with the girl in L.A. for 4 years and did marry her. So, I mean, it was toxic and it was awful, but still. So the problem was, one, I didn't get on my knees about this at all.
Mm.
It just felt like it was right. And so I wasn't completely praying about it. I wasn't seeking wisdom from guys that have done it.
Because
they would have been like, no way, dude, date her for a year. What do you have? Why would you do that?
Right.
And we need to see her through all the seasons and stuff like that. And I probably would have been like, nah, it's good. You know, I probably would argue.
Yeah, you don't understand.
Yeah, you don't know. These girls different, bro.
Right.
But I still might have heard that and been like, yeah, why am I such a rush? You know?
Right.
So anyway, when that happened, she was on X Factor, which is a voice show. Yeah, and she was third, and so she went to L.A. Hollywood and all that deal. And so her little girl group, like kind of like a Dixie Chicks thing, started getting all these shows around Austin and stuff like that. It's bluegrass. It's perfect.
Right.
Like, and then playing in Nashville and all this stuff. And then when all that stopped, because it does,
because
you're on a vocal show. Those come out. There's three a year.
Right.
So then the next episode comes on, the next season, and now who cares about third place? Who cares about first place? Really? I can't tell you the last person who won The Voice, you know?
Right.
So it's one of those deals. And so she went into a huge depression because now the show's dried up. And then I start to become a worship leader right then. And so she was like real bitter to that. And I'm trying to tell her all these fun things that are happening. And also I was playing. Like, we won a battle of the bands, and then I was playing with, like, Building 429 and the Afters and some of these people that are on radio.
Oh, okay.
So it was starting to happen pretty quick, and so she would just be like, who are they, and blah, 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 and, like, just real bitter to that.
Wasn't supportive.
And that was really difficult.
Sure.
In the beginning, and then it got harder and stuff like that, but it was really that. I mean, at the end of the day, if she would have really tried – near the end, I mean, it was only 5-6 years, but if she would have really been down to, I would have worked out anything.
Right.
So you had, you left two good churches on good terms.
Yeah.
And this last church, because of your divorce, you said, how did that change your mindset or your heart? Like, did you get hurt some way?
Mm-hmm.
I
went back to personal training, like in-home personal training, and I was like.
I mean, how was your relationship with God then? I mean, were you like.
Really good, but that church made me question church.
I got you.
Like church hurt.
Which is really common, right?
Sure.
But I went back to training. I feel like I was like doing graphic design for a second. Like I thought I could do that or something. I don't remember. I was trying to figure out stuff. And
real estate.
I get there later.
Okay.
My stepdad was a real estate agent then, and I should have. Yeah. But anyway, so I'm doing training. And then one morning I wake up, and I just can't shake it. I'm like. I'm a worship leader.
Right.
Like this church can't define every church.
Exactly.
Turned out it did. I mean, it was hard. Obviously, being divorced was like a scarlet letter, and I've talked about that before, but it took 7 months of trying before I could get another job.
Wow.
Yep. All around the country. I was flying places. I was playing weekends. I was, you know, meeting the staff, all that. And then you can't model family. We just don't want a single guy on the platform, just different stuff. Your divorce, the reasoning's not enough. You say she might have cheated, but do you really know? Like, they're very, it was rough.
Right.
These interviews were like really, really rough. And just the way some of these staffs just felt like their stuff didn't stink. And like, it was crazy.
Right.
I mean, it got to a point where I got pretty frustrated a couple times.
For sure.
And I was like, is anyone your staff divorced? Anyone look at porn? Like, I mean, I would just say things just
the frustration would build, and like, you flew me out here and you're going to do, I mean, it got really bad and I got pretty bitter.
Sure.
So I kind of had to relax that before. Cause one guy, I was talking to a guy in Colorado and he was like, man, he was a headhunter, a big one, one of the biggest ones in the country. And he was like, man, I think you're going to need to make peace with some of these churches that were out of line.
Right.
Because it feels like you're going to want to do that immediately, like any interview.
Yeah, you're carrying that in.
Yeah, and that's what was happening. Like, I would start interviews and be like, well, here we go, you know?
Right, where they're just genuinely asking to get the information to kind of fill out the situation, and you're already on defense mode where you're just going in right to attack. Like, no, we're
and
not.
Sometimes I was real rude because I.
You sit down at a table, here's my divorce papers.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, again.
Sometimes I couldn't handle it, and I would just be like.
You know, that's a painful process, and they're bringing, you know, making you relive it, and then sitting there, you know, ostracizing you for it. And it's like, again, when, you know, I think you mentioned before that, you know, there was a church, you know, in the public, the leader, you know, had an addiction.
Yep, he had a porn addiction.
And
the whole church walks with him, and then they can't hire me.
Because you're divorced. I mean, that's really got to be a slap.
Louisville, Kentucky.
How do you, you know, I mean, that's a.
Yeah, it was tough. And so once I relaxed on it, I think that was a game changer. People still had a problem with it, but I was okay with it.
Mm. Right.
I mean, this would, like, put me into depression the rest of the week. You know,
sure.
If a church was that, you know, I would just go into a pretty dark place about it. So it was – and try not to judge the church as a whole and, you know, all this kind of thing. But still, it's just – it's a business of people.
Right.
And some are going to be really good at that, and some are going to be really, really bad at that and really legalistic.
So here again, so God, you know, is coming to bat for you again because you played baseball at 5'3".
Mm-hmm. 5'3", but every.
And, you know, he's coming to bat for you again, and, you know, he helps you through. So you have another victory with God. You know, now, how do you get to Medina?
Well, hold on. There was something about a real estate agent. What was going on with that?
Oh, well, okay. When was real estate? Oh, that's when I went on tour as a career. And that was actually going really, really well. And then, and that was awesome, man. Like, I can't, it's not as sexy as you think.
Right.
For sure. I mean, it's a lot of long nights and all that. But you're getting to play music for a living. Like, it's just, and then you're impacting people. But I do always say I couldn't really actually do life with any of these people. I'm just on tour. So if I meet you that night, then awesome, and I can pray for you and all that.
Right.
But working at a local church is so – there's so many – there's hundreds of people that I actually know their situations.
Right.
And get to watch marriages get better and alcohol go away and stuff like that. And that's way more valuable. So to do both is pretty cool that I got to see both of those sides. But COVID hit in the middle of me being a touring musician.
Oh, okay.
So that's where real estate came in.
Okay.
So I did that for 2.5 years. And then again, it was a similar thing where I was like, nah, I'm a worship leader.
Just not feeling it.
This is not for me. And I was doing okay. I mean, it's real estate. It's not a rocket science. You put it the right price, it sells. You know? And yeah, you got to be relational, which I am. So it's like, it was fine. But it never, even when I sold big deals, I never was like, oh, yeah. Like, I just couldn't.
Right.
It just wasn't that fulfilling for me. The money is, but it never was. And so I basically was like, I'm still this.
Right.
I'm this for the rest of my life. You told me that 15 years ago.
Right.
You know, so I'm going to get back out there. And then even then, so I've been here almost a year. March 4th will be a year that I've been on staff. So we're only talking a year and a half ago when I started getting back out, like, you know, interviewing a lot,
right.
Or 2 years ago. And same thing. So even 2 years ago, the divorce was still A1A issue. Yeah. Even one in Highlands Ranch, Colorado. I think I was talking about that one before, how they were like, you need to write a letter. Exactly detailing like what the divorce looked like, and it was like, that's painful.
Right.
But
yeah,
that's 7 years ago, man.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about? And so, and then again, you know, I write all that letter and they're like, man, we love your energy and we this and we that, and we could see you totally here at our church, but that letter just don't feel like it qualifies you. And that just sucks.
Right.
So even 2 years ago, and that was like a year and a half ago, still. And so, so then I tell this story a lot. St. Cloud, Minnesota. So this is like a 3 week span. Mm. St. Cloud, Minnesota, Scottsdale, Arizona, Medina, Ohio. And so that was kind of the deal. And in St. Cloud, it was a lot of money. Just to, you know, shorten this whole thing, it was a lot of money, but I wasn't really thrilled with the church or the community. And so it was one of those things where God was like, if you just want to make money, you could just stay in real estate.
Right.
Do you really want, or do you want a community that's, you know, you're a good fit for and a culture changer and, you know, some of the things that I want you to do as a worship leader. And then Scottsdale, Arizona. Scottsdale, I love it.
Right.
I used to live in Tucson, you know, so all that was there. But I didn't love the church. The pastor, like, I just couldn't. He wore the same shirt every Sunday. I'm not real sure why. But he was kind of a brand guy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like a black polo every Sunday. Every Sunday. Still.
He might have like 10 of them.
And so. Yeah, maybe. But
well, I mean, it's a week. He washed it, but still, why? You know, there's right. no color.
Maybe.
Right.
The only thing that was fun about that church is when I walked in, we did a ping pong tournament in the office. Like, the minute I walked in, I just came from the airport, and they were like, all right, hop in, you're next. And it was a ping pong. And I was like, oh, I could do this place, you know. And then, no, that was the highlight of the trip.
Right.
It was the ping pong tournament. And they were really good. I didn't fare as well as I thought I should have. But anyway, so
then the
same thing. So then I said, then God was kind of telling me, you know, hey, if you just want a cool place to live, be a real estate agent in Scottsdale.
Right.
Like, you could do that. You have friends here, you know.
Hmm.
Or do you want, again, do you want to be at a place where the community is thriving, where you could be a good fit, where you could culture change, you know, some of that. And so then I come here, and all the other things weren't there.
What was that initial reaction?
But the community was there, you know.
Right.
It was the reverse of what I just said.
But what was that initial reaction when near Cleveland, Ohio? Came across your phone.
Oh, dude, no, with caps and explanation points. But that's because I said this before. That's because it just doesn't have a good reputation.
Right.
I don't know why. I think it's an underrated city, but you have to live here to know that.
Right.
You couldn't even stay here a week and know that. Like,
right.
You kind of have to live here.
And
you
came in the winter, so.
And I came last January.
It's not.
It's
right.
horrible.
I mean.
Yeah. So, but again. It was the reverse of what I just said. Is it Scottsdale in terms of the lifestyle? No, not
right.
even close. But did they have a community that I'm a good fit in? No. You know, is it the money that St. Cloud was? No, not even close.
Right.
But do they have a community that I'm a good fit in? You know what I mean? So it was like I had to really struggle, like wrestle with that. And I was like, oh, man. And then at the end of the day, it's Dave.
Right. So you agree to come in. What's your first impression when you walk in?
Well, the main thing is the building, where it is, all that you don't see online is
right.
beautiful.
Yes, right. for sure.
And the room is amazing. And it's like, I love the stage being low because it feels like everyone's around me. Mm-hmm. And so worship is incredible. So I didn't see any of that online. And I'm trying to do a better job of getting to where you can see more of that now. I have the video in the beginning where you go through the driveway and through
right.
the church.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
you can, you know, I had a guy do that with a GoPro or whatever. So you can kind of point of view, see what that looks like. Because
right.
no one knows how awesome our church is.
Right.
You just don't. You don't see it like that. So that was my first impression on the building. I mean, I had to get past like, what is this? It's gray and slushy.
Right.
And
right.
I'm at Cool Beans for 5 hours. I don't know what else to do in this town, you know. So I had to get past all that. But then when I walked in the building, I was like, what? This lobby's incredible.
Right.
You know? And so, but that wasn't enough. I mean, it really wasn't. It wasn't until Sunday. I mean, it wasn't until the fourth day I was here that God was just like, you're coming here.
Mm.
Like, there's no way around it.
How did your interview and your process go? I mean, they were obviously
it went good.
Accepting of the divorce and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Dave said that in the very beginning. He knows how hard that is for me to
right.
in interviews.
Mm.
So he disarmed that from the off the bat. And, you know, Dave, man, he is like the most honest, transparent. He's going to say his stuff in an interview.
Right.
So it was, that part is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to find a much more genuine person to lead your church for sure. Mm-hmm. Ambrose is one solid guy, man.
Yeah. And so, he has his stuff, but he tells you.
Right.
Like
right.
He's
human.
He owns it and
he owns it. He still works through it. Like right. The kind of conversations we've had over a cigar or just at his house or whatever, it's like, oh yeah, this dude's my pastor.
Right.
Like
right.
That's amazing. You know?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Right. No, for sure. So what was did you already have the decision made?
No.
And then so you have your first.
So until Sunday, my decision was made, which was a big no.
Right.
Which was like, you know, I'll get in a, and I also I had a church from Texas that texted me that week too. So I was like, all right, well, you know, I got another opportunity, but I'll just go guest lead. I'll do my best.
Just go through the motions.
Go through the motions, even in the huddle in the beginning, which I, you know very well now. But even that one, I was just like, again, this is a cool lobby. Cool lobby. It's a cool room. And, you know, and then it just happened. Just that first song, I was like, all the things I'm talking about, when I step off the mic and they're singing Battle Belongs, it was like, you can culture change here.
Mm, right.
So just so you know, like that's what you've been looking for and you can do that here.
Absolutely.
And then just the people standing up and accepting Christ that day and Dave knowing their name, that's community. So all of in that 9 o'clock, some things happened and the 10:30 more things happened. And it was just like, and then Dave coming up to me and saying, you were a big part of what happened today.
Sure.
A lot of people don't stand if we don't get there from the worship.
Right.
And so it was like painfully obvious because I was still kicking and screaming, like heading to the airport going, ah!
Right.
You know, and then, you know, again, and then
didn't you even text your mom? You're like, it ain't happening.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And then on the way to the airport, I texted her and said, maybe it is. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm still real confused. And she was like, all right, fly safe. So then I get back. I don't talk to the other opportunity because I wanted to make sure this one was done. You know,
right.
If I'm not going to do it, then I'll go talk to that opportunity. It's down the road of where I was
living.
They're
not going anywhere.
They're not going anywhere. So, but honestly, that church didn't have the same cachet that Heartland does. It didn't have that culture changing community that I just found when I was here.
Right.
And so I was like, just, you know, am I going to be able to do the Midwest and, you know, that kind of thing? Because I mean, Arizona, California, Texas is
right.
The furthest from what I'm used to.
Right.
And so that was there. And then, you know, and then it was, I kind of starting to get warm to it. Warm's not a good word, but you know what I mean? Like getting used to it and starting to think about it. And I wasn't really interested in anything else until I really heard where they were at. And then, like I said, if, you know, Nicole texted me and said, what's the lease to buy out the lease? Cause I just resigned.
Right.
And it was very high. And I kind of texted that, and I was like, if this isn't a game changer, you know, then I really feel like you're in this. And then when she called me and offered the job and said, we're going to pick up the tab on the buyout, I was just blown away.
Right.
That's a lot. Not a lot of churches would do that.
No.
And it's not about the money. It just shows that they're willing to invest like that.
Sure.
So it was
that's
pretty obvious.
Just shows how confident they are in you and your abilities. And
yeah.
And again, it proved successful. I mean, like I told you before, you know, Tony was with our church for a long time.
Yeah, and he's amazing.
He, you know, again, he's got that Australian accent. You know, he's a good-looking guy, and it's like, you know, he's a very tough act to follow up.
Yeah,
when
absolutely.
He left, it was like, you know, it was going to take somebody like you, that energy, that talent, that ability, and just come in, and I think God knew that.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, he maneuvered everything along your path to bring you where it was. And it was even that reluctancy and that, you know, that hesitation or whatever. And then at those two services, it was like the congregation responded to you like, hey, you know, we still love Tony, but this guy's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and a lot of people told me that, which is really cool. Quick Australian story that I didn't mention last time. So I had a commercial air in Australia.
Oh, really?
For Dell that I'm in.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason I did it is because I went to an audition for a Dell commercial in Britain. And I didn't really – I'll do the impression in a second. I don't want to give it away. But I didn't really have a British accent. Like, right. I really only have an Australian or, like, Irish or Adam Sandler. Those are my three right. go-tos. Or Christopher Walken. And so I was like – I go in and do this audition, and they go, oh, what was that? And I was like, that's my British. And they were like, that's the worst. I've never even – I'm not even sure that's even what is that? Like, that's not nothing.
Right.
And this one lady in the back was like, kind of sounds Australian. And I was like, yeah, it's that. And they were like, well, this is for the British market. So bye. I'm leaving. My agent calls me, like, I'm halfway home, which is 3 hours in LA. And you know, and so she goes, yeah, you're not getting that, but you are gonna get it for the Australian market. So for Dell, I said Dale drives innovation, and I'm on that commercial.
Wow.
Who's Dale?
But Dale driving innovation was my British audition.
Oh. Right.
Anyway, I told Tony that story because it's fantastic.
What do you say about it?
He's the only one that would understand it completely.
Right.
You know. Yeah, Mike.
That's good.
That's what he said. Yeah, Mike. Yeah, but no, that's been awesome. I think I said this before, but I think I had to be a different energy altogether, because if I was just him but a worse version, this wouldn't have worked.
Right. No, for sure.
It would have been horrible. But I think Dave and Nicole both knew that. Mm. He's going to bring something that we haven't seen yet. And yeah.
And definitely, you know, it was much needed for, and I think, again, with the impact of Tony leaving, mm-hmm. and the way the congregation felt, and, you know, it's one thing to see him, he's still there on Sundays,
right.
You know, coming to service and stuff, but to not have him up on the church, or up on the stage, you know, in the front leading us and stuff. And again, your energy, you know, it's just a completely different, refreshed, and it was like you took that house of mourning and just... lifted it up,
yeah.
And just turned it over to God, and it was like God just, you know, you started shining. It was just amazing to see.
Yeah, yeah, it's been awesome, man. It's been awesome.
So,
even the readers, Rich and his wife.
Oh yeah,
they were Tony fans. I mean, still huge Tony fans, but like it took her a minute, and she told me that we went to Paul Crocker's Christmas show together. Like, I've done a couple things with the readers; they're awesome. And she was just like, I think I'm in with you. I think I'm
all in finally.
Yeah, I think I'm all in. And I was like, oh, that's very sweet of
you.
A year later.
So you started, yeah, like March all the way whip around the following December,
yeah,
like
yeah.
9 months. It
I think
took
I'm
you.
Into you now. Yeah,
no, well,
that's fine. That's totally fine. But people do still say occasionally, you know. Like I told you before, they used to say for months, now I love Tony.
Right.
But man, you really blah, blah, blah. But now
right.
they don't do that as much. But occasionally still.
Right.
Still people will let me know. Like they'll be like,
well,
yeah.
It hasn't officially been a year yet. I mean,
that's
you know.
True. But people, I love I've gotten a lot of these in my career. Well, this one's different. But the whole like, man, I wasn't sure about you at first. I get a lot of that.
Yeah.
But one time I was playing in Austin. And a lady goes, when you started, I was like, I'm not going to like this guy at all.
It's right
and
away.
She goes, and then I think you're my favorite worship leader. And she started crying.
Wow.
And I was like, why don't we just cut that first part? What was the point of the first part?
Right.
Like, why couldn't you just
put you back? Just put you down a little bit.
Right. Why can't we just
so
go
people,
to, hey, you're like amazing and awesome, and then just start crying in your arms like.
Yeah.
Why do we have to have that bad negative?
Yeah,
part
yeah. I've gotten a ton of that because I think a lot of people don't. They want to make sure
that it's like there's a little humility in it.
Right, right.
So they will say like, man, when you walked in, I was like, duh. And now I listen to your music every day. And it's like, well, whoa. Thank you. How am I going to not hear that first part?
Right.
And then one time, one of my favorite comments.
You get a t-shirt says something like, I may not be Tony.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
Hey, my wife's got a cricket. We can make you a shirt.
On your 1 year anniversary.
I may not be Tony, but.
I made it a year.
But I wasn't an Australian commercial.
No. Dale drives innovation. I think there was more to the script. I just can't. That's all I remember.
Right, right.
But I think we would have to say something. What else could we say? I like the but I made it a year, or but. I like the idea a lot.
We'll have to come up with something.
I like it on the back, though.
Right.
And then I'll just turn around so you can see it.
Right, at the end.
Yeah, I may not be Tony, but neither are you. Oh, what? So the one time a lady said to me, I was on tour, and she said, you know, people try to prophesy over me a lot. And sometimes I just have to check it with the Lord and be like, was that any? Mm. I've played in a lot of charismatic venues and stuff like that. And she came up to me and she said, I feel like someone's going to give you $1 million. And I said, who?
Right.
And she goes, I just feel like God's telling me someone's going to give you $1 million. And at the time, this is what I said, because I've had enough of these happen where I just don't believe it. Mm. And so I said, you're going to give me $1 million? Because she had a check. And she goes, that is so disrespectful. And it was like for $50 or for a couple t-shirts. And I was like, what do you mean? I don't understand what you're saying.
Right.
And I go, ma'am, no Christian artist get $1 million. Like, you think I'm going to be the first
right
to just get a check? And she was just like, I'm just saying. Like, she got mad.
Wow.
And she was like, this is what God's telling me. And I was like, what do I do with that?
Like,
what do you do with that?
Well, God's telling me it's you that's going to give me the million. So, you know,
my God is saying
that
you.
Right. The person that tells you you're going to get $1 million, that's who's giving it to you.
Yep.
So,
yep.
I'm going to need you to add a couple zeros to that.
That's to that $50. Thanks a lot, Pam. The other thing is, the other one I got that I really loved is a lady was like, I feel like you're going to be like David. And I was like, this is after a big worship night. It was awesome. And she said, I just feel like God's telling me you're going to be like David. And I just, this is just what I said, because this is who I am.
Oh, boy.
I go, I'm going to cheat on my wife and then kill a guy? And she was like, no. And I go, I'm going to be a king? And she was like, no. And I was like, well, what else is he? I mean, he's a man after God's own heart. Is that what you're saying? Because, yeah, I can get behind that. And that made her mad, too. She was just like, I'm just saying.
Wow.
It was like, how vague is that?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, what are you telling me? There's no kings here. And I definitely don't want to do his other thing. I mean, I guess I could kill a giant someday.
I mean, I'd rather do that than any of the other stuff.
Right. By the way, I did some studying on David versus Goliath the other day, because I'm in 1 Samuel right now.
Mm-hmm.
They think, a lot of scholars think, I don't know if you ever heard this, because, you know, we're not always positive something absolutely happened, or if it's just metaphor, right? Or like a folk's tale that happened, right, and then it helps us get to somewhere else or whatever. But so I never really questioned it. I always thought, like, yeah, he's just real good at slingshot. That's what he did. But okay, so Goliath's like 10 foot, right? Mm. And David's 5'3". You know what I'm saying? And he really...
Did he swing a bat?
He was like 5'5". He hit for contact, that's for sure. And so anyway, he possibly, instead of hitting him in the forehead, which he had a helmet on, a bronze helmet, and so instead of that, there might have been room in between his kneecap, which is about where David would be to a 9-footer, 10-foot guy. So it's possible that, and this was fascinating, I never even knew this perspective, and you can look it up, it's everywhere. It's possible he hit him in the kneecap, and that's what collapsed him. And then the dude had 126 pounds of armor on. So once you're down, and then he took his sword and cut his head off. So that, to me, makes more sense than hitting someone in a helmet and lodging a stone into a helmet. And then why would he fall forward? You would fall back. Anyway,
This is still fun, man. Like, I love studying the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Because of this. You know?
I mean, it definitely makes more sense.
It makes more sense.
Logical of, again, if you hit your knee and then you fall down and.
Yeah.
I mean. Well, I've got like 8 commentaries here. We can go
yeah,
through.
Yeah,
yeah.
Go ahead.
We can
go
dig
ahead and
check into
it,
bro.
Yeah. So I like doing that, though. I definitely, every time I read, especially Old Testament, I'll be like, wait, what are people saying about that? And that's really fun for me now.
Right.
Hmm.
I didn't used to do that. I think I would just take it for face value and be like, okay. But now I'm like, no, man. There's a much more mature relationship with Christ now where it's like, I'm so secure with it, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But there was a point where I was immature in my faith where I wouldn't allow you to question anything, because if you question one thing, then it's a wrap.
Right.
And now I know, like, no, that's what he invites us to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's how we get closer to him.
Right. He wants us to wrestle with these things
right.
and debate them and talk about them and dig into them to find out, you know, to get those different perspectives.
Right.
So, and again, you have a leader like Ambrose. I mean, that guy's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. And he has a huge Bible knowledge.
Oh, mm. Yeah.
Huge. Clint does, too.
Clint does, too.
Clint is I love that guy, but he's a hard man to talk to sometimes with, you know, that whole philosophy thing. Like, he's going in 20 different directions
yeah.
where it's just like, look, dude, I need you to stay in this lane for me and help me. Because he'll be, like, he'll start with me, and then before I know
it,
we're over here, and I'm like,
you see, what's funny is you know him like that. I know him as the guy that does Donald Trump impression every day. I mean, he's a big goofball, but
right.
I don't really get into, I mean, some theological conversations with him, but he'll get over my head real quick.
Oh, I mean, he does for me, for sure. But
yeah.
When he
Dusty's more my speed.
Dusty. He's another character, man.
He's actually really knowledgeable, too.
I mean, they all are.
Yeah,
yeah for sure. But, you know, when Clint was given about how we read the Bible and stuff, and it was like, I just loved that sermon when he did it, you know, and I went up to him afterwards, and I was like, you know, it's people need to listen. You know, this is something we need to hear more often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Bible is not a book. It's 66 books.
Right.
And, you know, you have different genres, you have different writing styles, and, you know, that's like saying, you know, when you go to the Bible, you're actually going to an entire library.
Right.
So, and that's to say is, you know, it's not like you're going to go into the kitchen and grab a cookbook and go sit down, you know, by the fire or in your comfy chair and go read that like you would a novel.
Right.
And, you know, so there's certain ways to read
right.
that I think you need to read the Bible literarily rather than literally.
Right.
And, like, when Clint and I were having a nice conversation after the service about that, and it was just, like, very refreshing of having, like, not that any of them, you know, Dusty, anybody could have done that service, but
right.
because
right.
of his, where he's at.
Yeah, yeah.
With his knowledge of...
Yeah, because of his knowledge, yeah.
Yeah, just that philosophy of where he's over-analyzing everything, I think it really, you know, he cracked into, like, a whole fresh area that I think maybe those guys would not have been able to happen.
Yep, yep.
And it was really awesome.
I'm encouraging him, though, to do more stand-up comedy in the middle of some of his sermons.
Oh, he's funny.
Because he needs to, because he's hilarious.
Yes, he is.
He is funny.
And sometimes a sermon, I'll be like, bro, where was the jokes, homie?
But, like, he wants to always be so serious.
I know.
And, like, you know.
But he did. He threw in a Trump one sermon, just a quick one. And I was like, dude, keep going.
Right,
you gotta
like, bring it. You got to ride that out.
Like, I try to be myself as much as possible on stage. It is my goal that I'm the same off stage and on stage. Now, I get it. I'm not going to be the exact same.
Right.
Right.
But it's my goal that it's real close. Because I've been around enough people where it's not. It's thousands of yards away.
Right.
And I can't stand
I mean, to compliment you in that regard, I mean, I've talked to you on stage, off stage, you know, in my home at worship night that you did for us for a Bill Glass event.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And you're always the same person.
Good, man. Like, that's a huge compliment.
Just a genuine, God-fearing, God-loving, you know, hey, how can I serve and how can I, you know, like just true to yourself and true to who, your calling with God.
Right.
And like so blessed you are and we are too that you didn't fall into that trap in L.A. and
right.
stay in
yeah,
that
absolutely.
And like you were able to see that for what it was and get away from that.
Yeah.
Because that corruption can really take, you know, good people like yourself and just, you know, run
yep.
them down the drain.
It's intoxicating. And, for sure.
You know, the money, yeah. the women, the drug, you know, just that whole atmosphere. I mean, everything about it. And to stay true to your calling and who you wanted to be as a man, that says a lot. And
yeah.
I mean, you wear it well. And again, you own that.
For sure.
And you are a genuine, great guy. And I mean, it's
thanks,
just,
man.
You know, a lot of love and respect to you for what you do, what you've been through, and, you know, just staying true to what God called you to do, man.
Appreciate it. Yeah. It's a daily rededication is what that is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like you got to choose that every single day.
Right. I mean, it's just like
or the world are getting to you immediately. I mean, it's
oh, yeah.
fast.
Right. In our recovery, it's the same
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's real easy for me to listen to that voice and to buy into that, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, this is – I am so much better. Now, so much happier, and I've gotten a little taste of what that actual genuine peace is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me tell you, man, there's nothing.
Nothing like
that
it.
Can compare to that.
So liberating.
And, you know, and it's, I'm not happy in my sorrow and in my grief, but when you can find peace in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nobody can touch it.
Right.
Nobody can
right.
touch it, man. And it's just, it's amazing.
That's good. Good stuff.
So, well, again, I just want to thank you for coming on the show.
Of course.
Again, you guys can see.
See you next week.
Take three.
I assume.
We'll go to my house, maybe.
We'll do it somewhere else. We'll give you a different venue. But, again, you guys can get Chad on Spotify and on YouTube. We have all of his stuff scrolling at the bottom of the screen. And, again, for us here at Sacred Ministries, we are on all the platforms. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe to our channel. And, again, next week we are planning on having, in 2 weeks, we're going to have Ricky Quinn.
All right.
He works at the steel mill with me. He's got 37 years of uninterrupted sobriety.
Whoa.
That is amazing.
That's awesome.
Really nice, dude.
So, again, Chad, it has been a pleasure and an honor, man. Thank you so
thank
much
you.
For joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Can't wait to see you Sunday.
Hey, we love you guys. And remember, more importantly, Jesus loves you more. So we'll see you guys next time on Sacred Conversations with Sacred Ministries. Have a good one, guys.